You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Now, the Rockets just won. They won a game. Shocking, right? After that 0-2 skid that looked pretty rough, and that game in Miami that was honestly abysmal. But they won a game, 107-100 against the Memphis Grizzlies in Memphis. Gave them a little taste of the Beale Street Blues. It wasn't a great game, by all accounts. I mean, the Grizzlies are a lottery team. They are a rebuilding franchise, and you edged them out 107-100. And they were missing arguably their best player in Triple J. Now, a win is a win, though. And you still have to look at it, and you still have to look at the good things that happened, still have to look at the bad things that happened, and try and evaluate the team from that aspect. And to me, the best thing that happened throughout this game, and it didn't really happen until the second half. So I don't know what Mike D'Antoni said at halftime, or maybe James Harden said something, or maybe the team, maybe nobody said anything, and the team just kind of realized that they were on pace to not only have just lost to the Miami Heat in an embarrassing fashion, but that they were on pace to potentially lose to the lottery Memphis Grizzlies as well. And upon realizing that, they came out with a lot more gusto in the third quarter and in the fourth quarter, and they played with more energy, they played with more hustle. The shots were still not falling particularly well. The shooting struggles continued for a lot of the guys, but they played defense, and they played defense well in the third and fourth quarters. And that's what really came down to how they got this win, was simply they just tried harder than they have. They probably tried harder in the second half of this game than I've seen them try in any of the previous games this season. They actually came out, and they hustled, and they played hard-nosed defense. To hold the Grizzlies to just 40 points in the second half after letting them score, what was it, 70 points? Yeah, 70 points in the first half. To limit them to just 40 in the second half, sure, you can attribute some of that to Memphis being cold, them not shooting the ball as well in the second half, but the Rockets were actually active. So many different guys, even James Harden to an extent, was active on defense. Daniel House was flying all over the place, securing rebounds. I mean, Daniel House's stat line, he finished the game 15 points, 9 boards, and 3 blocks. He was all over the defensive end, also had a couple steals. James Harden finished with 44 points, 10 boards, 6 assists, a couple steals, a block. He did have 6 turnovers, but you know, we know to expect that with James. Eric Gordon didn't quite break out of his shooting slump necessarily because he was 3 of 9 from behind the arc, so, you know, roughly 33.33 repeating percent. He was 5 of 17 overall, so not great, but it does show that he was trying to get to the rim, trying to get shots closer to the basket rather than just settling for those long-distance bombs that he just seems to keep missing. He finished with 16 points. had 5 boards, an assist, a steal. Not an amazing stat line. He did have one ferocious dunk, though. Absolutely posterized Valanciunas, which was very exciting. I had to go on Twitter and I had to pause the EG slander for a moment just to appreciate that dunk. Because when EG dunks, it looks like he gets shot out of a freaking cannon. He's 6'3", 6'4". I think he's listed at 6'3 officially now after the official height changes. But when he dunks, he gets up there. And it's like he barely clears the rim. And he's got so much weight to him. I'm not calling EG fat. I'm just saying he's got a lot of weight. He's got a lot of mass. So when he jumps and gets up there and barely clears the rim and then dunks it, it's like he's almost tearing the rim off every time he dunks. And so that dunk especially was invigorating. It was nice to see from him after all his struggles. And hopefully this game, even though it wasn't a perfect game from EG, and even though he didn't shoot the lights out of the ball, hopefully this game was kind of a wake-up call and he can get back to the EG that we know and love. Maybe not the March EG, the one that apparently turns into prime Ray Allen. But as long as he can get back to some semblance of the EG that we are comfortable with, the EG that can actually spread the floor, averages, you know, between 15 to 20 points, but on any given night could go off for, you know, near 30 plus. Maybe not 30 plus, but you know what I'm saying. EG is, he's our scoring punch. He's our consistent scoring punch, and he needs to be the backup scoring punch to either James Harden or Russell Westbrook, because the expectation can't be for James and Westbrook to, James can't average 40, 50 points a game. He's doing it right now, and he's going to continue to average a ridiculous scoring stat line for the rest of the season. I predicted he'd break the 36 points per game metric from last season, but I don't expect Westbrook to be the secondary scorer on this team. Based on what we've seen from Westbrook in his first 6 games as a Rocket, disregarding the really horrible Miami Heat game, because nobody played well in that game, Westbrook is looking to get others involved and not necessarily looking to get his. I mean, again, the number of his potential assists has been off the charts to start the season. So if we can just get guys going, like EG, get PJ Tucker rolling again, get guys going with their three-point shot, he's going to be more than happy to sit there and average 14, 15 assists a game and just let others drain three-point shots. So I can very easily see James Harden being the leading scorer, with Eric Gordon being maybe not right behind him, but hovering around that 20 points per game marker. And then same thing with Clint Capella. If Capella can get it rolling, I called Clint Capella averaging 20 and 10 this season. I thought his rebound numbers would dip a little bit with Westbrook, but I figured that with him averaging just a hair over 16 points per game last season, that with Westbrook and James Harden having two excellent facilitators to continue this lob threat of his, I figured he'd be able to break the 20 points per game metric. And I still think that. I think that once Clint gets rolling, once he gets a little bit more comfortable with the offense, once the three-point shooting returns and the spacing is more ideal, I think Clint could still easily hit 20 points per game on average. So I could see Westbrook being the fourth best scorer on this team, realistically. And I'm sure he'd be happy with that. If he was averaging a triple-double, but it was less than 20 points per game, and he was getting anywhere from 13 to 15 assists, and then somewhere in the double-digit numbers of rebounds, that's him helping the team, because anybody who's taking a shot, honestly, anybody who's taking a shot that's not named Russell Westbrook, it's probably a better percentage look unless Westbrook is right at the rim, because he's just not a great shooter. He's not great from mid-range. He's not great from behind the arc. So it's better for him to facilitate and use his toolkit to get other people better shots. Now, of course, we didn't have Russell Westbrook in this game. He was sitting out because it was the second night of a back-to-back. He played 26 minutes in the loss to the Miami Heat. So he did not play against Memphis. And I said it in the last pod, and I just want to wrap up this segment with it really quick before we continue to dive into this win against the Memphis Grizzlies, the 107-100 road win for the Rockets, moving them to 4-3. This win did not happen because Russell Westbrook did not play. That is not how this happened. just because Russell Westbrook sat out for the first game and just because the Rockets got a win, those two things are not connected whatsoever. Westbrook plays with just as much hustle and energy and heart as you could ask any player to play with. Does he have his defensive deficiencies? Yes. Does James Harden? Yes. Does having them both on the court at the same time compound the fact that they both ball watch on defense and give up some easy buckets occasionally? Absolutely it does. And those are very solvable problems. In the second half of last night's game, I specifically watched James Harden during the Memphis Grizzlies' offensive possessions just to keep an eye on him and see what his off-ball awareness looked like. And throughout at least probably the first few minutes of the third quarter, I saw him noticeably checking where the ball was and then putting his eyes back on the defender. So rather than just sitting there ball watching like he consistently does, so I don't know who barked at him in the locker room, but he was doing that at least for the first few minutes of the third quarter. I stopped paying as close attention to it after the first few minutes of the third quarter, but it was noticeable. There's multiple times where James Harden's turning his head, snapping his neck, keeping an eye on the ball, but then turning back to his defender so that they're not getting these open backdoor cuts. Whatever needs to be said to Westbrook and whatever needs to continue to be said to Harden about this lazy defense, they don't even have to be great defenders. Nobody's expecting James Harden or Russell Westbrook to be a lockdown defender. They just can't give up those gimme points. They cannot give up a backdoor cut and a wide open layup. Those are the killers. As long as they can play decent man-to-man defense and as long as they just don't lose their guy off the ball, that would solve maybe not most of the Rockets' problems, but that would solve a fair number of them. Again, Myers Leonard in the Miami Heat game went off for 20 points, and I cannot count the number of times it was simply just because he went to go fake a screen and then went for a backdoor cut, or was simply standing in the corner and then just cut towards the basket because whoever was holding him wasn't paying attention. And this is not just isolated to James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Other players have done it too. Even PJ Tucker's had a couple times that I've noticed where he's not paying attention or he's ball watching and his man cuts to the basket. And because Rockets are the other team's playing five out or the Rockets are playing five out, whatever it may be, there's nobody in there to stop him. There's no paint anchor. There is no shot blocking threat. So as soon as somebody cuts to the basket, it's basically free layup line. So we'll talk more about the good things and the bad things from the Memphis Grizzlies win. Sorry, the Rockets win against the Memphis Grizzlies. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But first, a quick message from our friends over at Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming, and you can get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. Again, that is 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. And welcome back into Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home to discuss everything Houston Rockets basketball. And right now we're discussing the 107-100 win for your Houston Rockets against the Memphis Grizzlies last night. And a couple of the guys that really stood out to me last night were Ben McLemore and Daniel House Jr. Now, coming into the season, I think most Rockets fans expected Daniel House to go back to that starting role, even though he's a younger, I say younger, he's 27, but he's more of an unproven commodity than Eric Gordon is. You know exactly what you're getting with Eric Gordon, more or less, but myself included, and most fans, and most of you listeners, remember fondly that stretch where Daniel House did start last season, and then before the contract dispute came up, and then he wasn't available until right before the playoffs, and then came back and wasn't quite in the rhythm, and then dealt with the foot injury throughout the playoffs, and just really wasn't the same Daniel House that we saw for that stretch of games where the Rockets went on a relatively strong win streak. I want to say it was like 9-3 with Daniel House starting, something pretty dominant, and he looked good. He provided that length alongside James Harden and Chris Paul that was missing since Trevor Ariza had left. Because again, we started Eric Gordon alongside James Harden and Chris Paul for much of last season, and that's a very small perimeter lineup. Chris Paul at maybe 6 feet tall, James Harden at 6'5", and Eric Gordon at now listed at 6'3". That is a ridiculously small lineup, and we still run that lineup a bit this season, but having a starter in Daniel House who's at 6'6", maybe 6'7", but the athleticism that he provides, and watching him attempt to secure rebounds, whether it's defensively or offensively, just seeing the effort that he puts in, and it showed last night. Last night he finished the game with 9 boards, 8 of them defensive. That's huge. Closing out a defensive possession is just as important as actually defending throughout the possession. Defense doesn't mean a lick. If you defend for 22 seconds and the ball clanks off the iron and nobody secures the defensive rebound, guess what? The opposing team gets a whole other 14 seconds to try and get a shot off. And do you know how hard that is to defend? Giving up offensive rebounds is killer. There was a sequence last night where the Rockets secured, what was it, 2 or 3 offensive boards in a row, and it was after every shot. They kept bricking threes, brick, 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 and every single time they secured an offensive rebound. And they secured those rebounds because of hustle and effort and energy. And then finally, I think it was Daniel House himself who canned the final 3 on that possession. And it's effort plays like that. It's those 50-50 plays where you're just hustling for loose balls, things like that, that Daniel House brings. He brings size. He brings athleticism. He brings a guy who isn't afraid to go off the dribble. He drove in to the basket a handful of times last night. Missed a couple dunks, unfortunately. And there's something going on there. He's arcing the ball back a little bit too far or something. He's gotten 2 potential posters now taken away from him just because he can't finish off the dunk attempt. So I'd really like him to figure out what's going on there. But overall, a really strong game from Daniel House. And I was frustrated, as most of you were as well, that Daniel House got sat for the Miami Heat game and that Eric Gordon got plugged into the starting lineup. And we all saw how that went. And I think that Daniel House came out in this game, even though he didn't shoot the ball particularly well, 6 of 15 overall, 2 of 9 from distance, his energy and his defense is exactly what you need in the starting lineup alongside James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And not only that, but his athleticism, he's probably the one guy on the team that I'm looking at. Yeah, he's probably the best guy to run alongside Russell Westbrook in transition. So starting him alongside Westbrook, Harden, Tucker, and Capella, the expectation is that House will guard the opposing best guard. PJ will take the toughest defensive assignment. So sometimes that might be a guard. And then Capella is supposed to anchor the paint. And that's a pretty strong balance of players who are defensive-minded or who have an obligation towards defense versus James Harden and Russell Westbrook, who, again, we know who they are, we know what they do or what they don't do, and they're not going to be lockdown defenders. Now, does that mean they can just mentally check out on defense? No, absolutely not. They need to still be engaged defensively. They still need to not ball watch. They still need to put their best foot forward on that side of the basketball and not just fantasize about what they're going to do on their next offensive possession. But having those 3 guys, House, Tucker, and Capella, in your starting lineup alongside Westbrook and Harden is, I think, the best option. And hopefully Daniel House's game from last night will show that to Mike D'Antoni, and he will not continue to start Eric Gordon. I don't think Eric Gordon has earned his starting spot back. I think that whatever shooting funk he is in, he has to figure it out from the bench because that's how this team will succeed. Having that scoring punch off the bench. Last night, the Rockets had 22 bench points. 12 from McLemore, who we'll get to in a second. Again, I'm impressed with him. Rivers had 7. Cephalosha had 3. Chandler with nothing. Clemens with nothing. Now, as far as rotation minutes go, Clemens probably wouldn't play. You'd have Westbrook plugged in, and then you'd have Gordon coming off the bench. That would be the ideal 10-man deep rotation, all things considered. And if you're getting Eric Gordon coming off the bench, if you're getting the real Eric Gordon coming off the bench, that is a 15 to 20-point guy that you've got coming off the bench. That's a guy you've got coming off the bench who's going to space the floor, spread things out, help you attack the basket, and overall just balance out your scoring load. Because if you start Eric Gordon and James Harden and Russell Westbrook, those are your three top scoring options. There can be an argument made for Clint Capella, but those are your three guys who are the best at attacking the basket, the best at getting their own shots off, whether it's from long range, whether it's just creating a shot at the basket, whatever it may be. Those are your three guys. Those are your three creators, whether for themselves or other people. And putting them all in the starting lineup, unless you're going to do some very weird minutes staggering where, like, you pull out Eric Gordon at the 8-minute mark in the first quarter, which at that point it really doesn't even make sense. You can't really keep two of each of James Harden, Eric Gordon, and Russell Westbrook on the court at all times like D'Antoni said that he wanted to do, and that sounded like a great plan. So I want D'Antoni to go back to having Eric Gordon on the bench. He doesn't deserve the starting role over Daniel House. Daniel House has played better to this point, and defensively, Daniel House has been much improved. The three block shots were incredible. His poise on defense is great, his timing, and a lot of that lends itself to his athleticism, or his athleticism lends itself to being a good defender. If you are more athletic than the offensive player, you're going to have an easier time keeping up with them, timing your jumps, blocking their shots, whatever it may be, contesting a quick pull-up. Athleticism plays a huge part in that. The other guy that I wanted to get to really quickly was Ben McLemore. McLemore was a team high. I take that back. Tyson Chandler was also a plus 12 last night. But McLemore was a team high plus 12 last night. He had 12 points, 3 of 10 shooting from behind the arc, 3 of 11 overall, only attempted one shot inside the three-point line. Went to the free throw line a handful of times, was 3 of 4 from there. Had a few assists, steal, turnover. Pretty solid stat line from Ben McLemore, honestly. You'd hope the three-point shooting was a little bit better, but he is filling in that Gerald Green role very well because he understands the expectation for him is not to come in and do anything other than just catch the ball and get a shot off really quickly and have zero conscience about it. As long as he's comfortable missing 6 in a row and then hitting the next 4 in a row, that's great. That's exactly what you want out of that guy. Because you don't want a guy who's going to sit there and get in his own head about his misses. You just want a guy who's going to reel off as many three-point shots as possible. Because in this offense, the Rockets don't necessarily have good three-point shooters. They just shoot more threes than anybody else. And when you shoot more threes, you're bound to hit more threes. But you have to actually have guys with quick triggers who are willing to actually shoot the basketball. That's why Thabo Sefolosha has been so frustrating, because he just won't shoot. He's got a slow release, and he's hesitant to shoot the ball. It kind of makes sense as to why his attempts per game were so low with Utah. It wasn't just the fact that he was only playing 10 or 15 minutes and only getting one or two attempts a game. It shows now. It shows that he probably just was hesitant shooting the ball. Unless he is wide, wide open, Thabo is not pulling the trigger, which is frustrating. But Ben McLemore is not shy. Ben McLemore will pull the trigger with a hair of space. That's all he needs. I hope that his shot selection gets a little bit better. There were a couple times that he pump faked and took a dribble to the left or to the right or to the basket and forced himself into a tougher shot. If the shot's not there, if he can't elevate immediately after the pass, just, you know, reset it. James, Russ, Eric, whoever it is, they can drive again. There's no reason to force up what would be called a bad shot, but his eagerness is exciting. D'Antoni trusts him. I still wish that D'Antoni would give a chance to Chris Clemens a little bit more. I understand the worries with his size, whether he's a weakness on defense, things of that nature. But overall, that game against Miami, Chris Clemens, I mean, he shot 4 of 9 from behind the arc. I think Chris Clemens could be a benefit, but I don't know if Mike D'Antoni's ever going to get to that point of trusting him. But if this is the Rockets' 10-man rotation, minus Clemens plus Westbrook, I'm not happy about it. I'm content with it, mostly because I think Sefolosha and Chandler are going to have their struggles with their age. And if it comes to the point where we're resting Sefolosha and Chandler, I would, again, really like to see Chris Clemens get a little bit of burn. And I'm going to keep saying it, I want to see Gary Clark play some minutes. For all of this team's deficiencies as far as length and athleticism go, I think Gary cleans up a lot of that. He lets you play small ball with him at the five, or him and PJ Tucker both out there. It doesn't matter who's four or who's five. Let PJ guard the guy with more sand in his pants. Let Gary be the weak side help defense. But he gives you length, he gives you rebounding, he gives you athleticism. The only thing he doesn't give you is maybe a super-duper consistent three-point shot on the offensive end. But it's fine. You go park him in a corner. People still have to honor, defenders still have to honor his three-point shot. They're not going to sag off of him as much as they're going to sag off Russell Westbrook. So you live with it. I really want to see him get recalled from the Vipers and come back up and actually play some meaningful minutes with this team. And we are back for our final segment of this podcast, in which I want to talk briefly about PJ Tucker, Austin Rivers, Cephalosha, and Chandler. Now, each of these guys, they have a very specific role. They have a niche within this system. And I'll start with PJ because I think his worries are less so than the other guys. But you've got to get PJ Tucker more three-point attempts. PJ only shooting the ball once in 34 minutes is ridiculous. He is your corner three-point shooter. Now, Westbrook and PJ have had a great connection so far to start the season, so maybe having or not having the gravity of Russell Westbrook led to less attempts for PJ Tucker. But James Harden draws just as much, if not even more, attention than Russell Westbrook does. So some of those three-point attempts that went to other shooters probably should have made their way over to PJ. Again, you've got James Harden, who is 7 of 16, Daniel House, 2 of 9, Eric Gordon, 3 of 9, Ben McLemore, 3 of 10. That's a majority of your three-point shooting right there. I would have loved to have seen a few of those shots go PJ's way, because I feel like he is one of the more consistent three-point shooters on the team, especially from the corners. He's not that great from the wing. He's not that great from top of the key. But when you've got PJ in the corners, that's a pretty lethal shot that he hits most times. So I do want to see PJ attempting more shots. Again, trying to remember off the top of my head, I'm not 100% sure if it was just them closing out too quickly on him or him just not getting enough looks. But PJ shooting the ball once, again, that's pretty unacceptable. You want to get him at least probably 4 or 5 three-point shots a game minimum, because he's in the game for 30-plus minutes a night, and he keeps the defenses honest by being there in that corner. So getting him more than one shot a game is critical to keeping this offense rolling along smoothly. Now, Austin Rivers hasn't looked bad, hasn't looked great to start the season. I don't know if it's because he just doesn't have the ball in his hands as much as he used to. It feels like he definitely handled the ball quite a bit more last season and in the playoffs than he has so far this year. And part of that may stem from the fact that Chris Paul, unlike Russell Westbrook, is more comfortable letting others handle the ball and simply going and playing off ball. And right now it feels like Russell Westbrook, the only person that he really truly defers to as far as letting them handle the ball, is James Harden. When James and Russ are in the game together, Russ defers to James quite a bit. And then when James decides he wants to defer to Russ, he does that. Great. James is also pretty comfortable about taking a player or two off on offense and simply giving the ball to Rivers or Gordon or even House sometimes and just letting them run the offensive action while he's on the weak side. And it's exactly what it looks like. It's just James taking an offensive possession off, whether it's to catch his breath, whether it's just, you know, to just see what the defense is doing, whatever it may be. James takes offensive plays off occasionally. It's not like it's a detriment to the team. He's still sitting on the three-point line. He's still ready to engage in the offense, but he does that from time to time. And it looked like last night, without Russell Westbrook being in there, and don't misconstrue this, this is not a good thing that Russell Westbrook didn't play basketball last night, but it looked like Rivers was a bit more comfortable being able to handle the ball more. He's probably a guy that, you know, likes to get into a rhythm, likes to dribble the ball, likes to feel the ball in his hands rather than just sitting on the three-point line and being ready to jack up a three. He's not known as a great three-point shooter. Again, he was 3 of 9 from last night, just 1 of 4 from deep. So he didn't have a good game, but he looked a little bit more comfortable handling the ball out there. And in any lineup that is sporting no Westbrook and no Harden, which it looks like on back-to-backs, we're not going to be having Russell Westbrook, which means there's going to be lineups that don't include one of Westbrook or Harden at times throughout the season. There is zero reason for Eric Gordon to ever handle the basketball in place of Austin Rivers. Give me Austin Rivers handling the basketball 10 out of 10 times over Eric Gordon. Unless you give the ball to Eric Gordon at the three-point line and tell him, all right, you're doing your thing, you're driving to the basket, or you're shooting a shot, no reason for Eric to handle the basketball. He was only credited 2 turnovers last night. Eric Gordon, that is. He was only credited 2 turnovers, and that is a miracle because I could have sworn that he coughed the ball up at least 4 or 5 times. There were so many different occurrences where Eric Gordon has the ball, and then suddenly he just doesn't, whether he dribbles it off his foot, whether he tries to create something, and maybe I'm misconstruing it because of the attempts where he drove to the basket and blocked himself once on the left side of the basket and once on the right side of the basket, just didn't quite get up high enough and tried to lay the ball up and laid it up into the bottom of the rim or in the bottom of the backboard. So maybe I'm also counting those, which would count as a missed shot, not as a turnover, but still, you know, a missed shot of that caliber, where he misses the shot right under the basket and then goes crashing into the stanchion, it ignites a fast break for Memphis, and it's not great. It's hard to defend. I've said it before, but when you are an offensive player, when you miss your shots on offense, it ignites the fast break for the opposing team. So the Rockets' offensive struggles, their shooting woes as of late, or not even as of late, just to start the season, their inconsistent three-point shooting has compounded the fact that they're not a good defensive team, because then teams can get out and play in transition against them. And the Rockets have been horrendously bad about getting back on defense and picking up guys in transition and preventing easy transition buckets. I don't have their transition defense right in front of me, but we know that they're we know that they're second in the last in league in defensive rating. But I would venture a guess that they're bottom 5 in the league in transition defense or fast break points allowed, whatever metric it is that calculates that, which is not great. Again, these are some pretty mighty defensive issues that they're going to have to iron out. But the main takeaway from last night, apart from the individual performances, some good, some bad, James Harden regaining some form of his shooting stroke, 7 of 16 from downtown, 12 of 28 overall, 13 of 18 from the line. He had his first poor free throw shooting outing last night. Still has made, I want to say, roughly over 100 this season. He's still shooting well over 90%. But apart from the individual performances, both good and bad, and the main takeaway for me from last night's game is that they came out in the second half and they played like they wanted to win this game. They actually came out and they played with energy and effort, and they were rebounding as a team, and they were hustling on defense, and even offensively, they looked engaged. They looked like they wanted this win. And it really helped down the line when Jay Crowder and James Harden got into a little bit. Angry Beard Man is scary Beard Man. James Harden, when he gets into it, when he gets angry, when you poke the bear of James Harden, that is not a player I would not want to face on the basketball court. Angry James Harden is a force. James Harden's already a force. And I wish that he would play angry just a little bit more often. I wish he would play with that kind of edge, that kind of screw you mentality a little bit. We see it from time to time. And when we do see it, it's incredible. And we saw it last night. We saw James Harden get pissed off about Jay Crowder, and he sunk a 3 right after that whole altercation where he was charged with a flagrant for swiping at Jay Crowder's no-no area. Jay Crowder was ejected. We saw a pair of free throws. James Harden shot a free throw for the technical charge to Jay Crowder. Then Dylan Brooks, I believe, shot the 2 free throws for the flagrant, and then Memphis regained possession of the basketball and hit a bucket, so they cut the lead to 6, which, again, was still dangerous territory for the Houston Rockets, who, to this point, have not shown that they can play defense down the stretch, but they did, and James Harden came back down and hit a 3, I think, on that very next possession, with a hand in his face, because he was angry Beard Man. But again, all of that, to get to that point, and I had somebody say that it was a depressing win because it's a 107-100 win over the lottery team Memphis Grizzlies. Sure, you can look at it as a depressing win, but I look at it as a team that is very, very talented top to bottom and that has started off the season in a bit of a lackluster way. They had the exciting opening night first half, and then regrettably the Bucks came back and beat them. Came in after that, won three games in a row, great. All close games, though. They haven't been dominant to this point. We've seen stretches of dominance, but they haven't been dominant from start to finish in a game. Then they lose to the Nets, and then they get embarrassed by the Heat. And so this team comes in here, and this is a talented team. This is a team that has championship aspirations. So to see this team come in here, 3-3, 500 for the season, to see them come in here and just, they need to rebuild and start from the basics. And some of the basics are just hustle, energy, and effort. Because the shooting will come. Eric Gordon and James Harden are too good at shooting the basketball for their shooting woes to continue for the entirety of the season. It's just not going to happen. It's not statistically probable at all. Probable or possible? Either way, it's not going to happen. They're not going to shoot this poorly the entire season. The defensive issues can be boiled down to miscommunication and laziness. Miscommunication and laziness, which laziness ties into hustle, energy, and effort. And we saw that last night. We saw less blown defensive coverages last night in the second half against Memphis than we had all season up until this point. Holding Memphis to 40 points in the second half was huge. And it boils down to energy, effort, and hustle. And that's the main takeaway. Because if you can carry that momentum forward into the next game, into the next two games, the next five games, 10 games, if you consistently play with hustle, that will carry you through stretches where your shot's not falling. That will carry you through stretches where it feels like nothing is going in offensively. And for a team that relies so much on their offense and isn't necessarily going to be a good or top-tier defensive team, you just got to try harder than the other guy. You might not be the more skilled defender. You might not be the more athletic defender. You might not be the taller defender. But if you're trying harder than the other guy, that pays dividends across the board, offensively, defensively, everywhere. And then when your teammates see you putting in that good faith effort, when they see you hustling, it makes them want to hustle. And then suddenly you've got five guys on the court, 10 guys overall, bench included, who are all hustling because they see each other doing it, because they want to fit into that mold. They want to be part of the squad that is hustling, getting boards, getting loose balls, diving for contested loose balls, whatever it may be. And so I take that away from this game, and I think that is a great thing to build on moving forward. And with Russell Westbrook coming back for the next game, which will be a slightly earlier tip-off here in Houston. It'll be a 6:30 p.m. tip here in Houston because of the national TV schedule against the YMCA Golden State Warriors. Their extremely thin roster. 6:30 p.m. tip-off here in Houston. As long as they can carry this momentum into the next game and then into the game against the Bulls on Friday, Rockets should be looking at being 6-3. And then not sure who comes up on the schedule after that off the top of my head, but 6-3 is not a bad spot to start. It's really not. All things considered, the problems that we've seen to start this season, just got to come out and get a win on Wednesday. Now, I think that's where we're going to go ahead and break things for this Tuesday morning show. As always, thank you for tuning in. And if you want more content before our next show, social media is where it's all happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Our special correspondent, Mr. Ben DuBose, is on there at Ben DuBose. And of course, the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. The website, LockedOnRockets.com. And of course, our email, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to let me know if there's any way that we can improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts at, if you could please take a moment to subscribe and rate the show. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they show up on the previously mentioned social media outlets. Sorry, tongue-tied there a little bit. And then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering your Houston Rockets. Again, for this Tuesday, November 5th episode, this is where we break things. As always, thank you for tuning in, and we hope to have you back again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.